Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
This is just in the best interest of the United States. Having a foreign company control the steel making in the United States, in my opinion, is not a good one.
That was Mayor Mike Parkinson of Granite City yesterday when he joined us discussing the blocked merger of U.S. Steel and Nippon Steel. The Biden administration blocked the nearly $15 billion merger. But joining us now with perhaps an alternative viewpoint of this blocked merger is Scott Linsicum. He's the Vice President of General Economics at Cato Institute's Herbert A. Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies. And Scott, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate your time on this.
No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and as Granite City, if you're familiar with the St. Louis area, right across the river from us, it's part of the bi-state area. And Granite City, my co-host Chris Ranji from there, it is a steel town. The community is around those steel plants. And so we've been following this issue with U.S. Steel, with Nippon Steel, from a very local perspective, wondering, okay, are people going to lose jobs in this town? Wanted to get your thoughts on this blocked merger.
Sure. You know, the most likely course for saving U.S. steel jobs actually was or is the Nippon Steel acquisition. The reality is that U.S. Steel, as an independent company, has been struggling for years, is really behind the eight ball in terms of needing to upgrade a lot of its older facilities, including in Granite City. And didn't really have a clear strategy for doing that. And instead, the company was looking at actually closing some of those facilities and moving to newer, more efficient facilities that it's opened in the South. So Nippon Steel comes along and says not only are they going to pay a massive premium for the company, way more than what the other rival bidder, Cleveland-Cliffs, was going to pay, but they promised to invest almost $3 billion in those very same steelmaking facilities. U.S. Steel's CEO has said that without those investments, they might have to close the plants. And so, you know, foreign investment versus domestic investment aside, the reality is that it's the Nippon Steel plan that's most likely to help these communities. And it's unfortunate, I think, that it's been blocked.
Mayor Parkinson's argument is that the Nippon deal, he and their government had not been communicated with by anybody other than the steel union, which has been in contacts with them a lot, but they can't get anybody from U.S. Steel to talk to them. They can't get anybody from Nippon to talk to them. So they want whatever assurances there are to be in writing, but they are not getting those. Why are they not getting those?
Yeah, that's actually surprising to hear because Nippon Steel has been very clear in writing repeatedly that it isn't going to shut down any unionized facilities in the United States. So I have no idea what's going on with the mayor of Granite City, I'll admit. But there actually was an independent arbitration panel that looked at this deal. The panelists were nominated and appointed by both the United Steelworkers Union and U.S. Steel. And the arbitration panel said point blank that this deal can proceed, and it can proceed because Nippon had made these written promises to invest in these facilities. The Nippon Steel has also made several promises to the United States government regarding these facilities, has even given offered to give the United States government veto power over future plant decisions. So, you know, again, it's always hard to know in kind of this fog of war setting what's going on in specific places, but everything publicly and officially indicates that the Japanese company is very much on board with these investments.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I did note, I asked the mayor about some of those points that you brought up, the promised investment, the veto power, and he said, talk is cheap until I see it in writing, and it could be that he wasn't being communicated with. But I guess if Nippon Steel is making those offerings, this deal was blocked under the mantle of national security. Now, I know Japan is one of our closest allies. I know we, you know, they buy lots of weapons and so forth from us, so we trust them to a certain deal. Is this a national security issue?
Not at all. First, you know, U.S. Steel evokes a lot of nostalgia for Americans, but the reality is that U.S. Steel is a relatively small company today. It's the third largest steel maker in the United States. None of its facilities have direct connections to the Defense Department or the U.S. military. Japanese investment in the United States is a totally uncontroversial thing. You know, you see Japanese automakers all across the country. There are billions of dollars in investment, thousands of Americans employed by these Japanese-owned companies. And as you mentioned, you know, the Japanese government is one of the United States' closest allies. There are thousands of American troops stationed in Japan. You know, you really can't get much closer. And so at the end of the day, combined with the investments that Nippon Steel has promised, there really isn't a solid case. And you don't really even need to take my word for it. As I've written and researched, you can go across the political spectrum from left to right to center at national security experts, at foreign investment experts who have looked at this deal, and they've all said that it doesn't raise any national security issues. And then even a lot of people inside the U.S. government, whether it's at the Treasury Department or the State Department or the Pentagon, they've also agreed that this doesn't raise any national security issues. At the end of the day, unfortunately, it seems like it's a lot about politics and not much about policy.
So what about the politics? Where is the benefit from President Biden blocking this or from Donald Trump seeming to be on the same page as it goes to this deal?
Yeah, it really comes down to the labor unions, the United Steelworkers Union, which really wants to bolster its political and economic power by partnering with Cleveland-Cliffs, the other bidder for U.S. Steel, and has simply said that it will not accept any other bidder, particularly Nippon Steel. This is a politically powerful union that has a lot of members in politically important places like Pennsylvania, and that seems to have carried the day, particularly if you're to believe a lot of the reporting that's been done on this, that, you know, at the end of the day, President Biden is a union guy, and he sided with the labor union, even though I should note, you know, thousands of U.S. steel workers have turned out in support of this Nippon Steel deal, you know, so folks on the ground, but the leadership is against, and that seems to have pushed Biden and Trump to oppose it.
So, Scott, if Nippon Steel, if they were to buy U.S. Steel, would that not affect the union? Like the workers would still remain unionized, the steel workers and so forth, or were
It's really hard to say. Sorry. You know, it seems that it's more about influence inside the company than it is about those specific jobs, because Nippon Steel has been very clear that they don't plan on cutting any union jobs. But I think it's quite possible that the United Steelworkers Union has less sway over a Nippon-owned U.S. Steel than they would over U.S. Steel itself right now, or Cleveland-Cliffs owned U.S. Steel. So that, again, it strikes me as being more about power and influence inside the company, in the government and elsewhere, than it is about actual steelworker jobs.
Yeah, I do get the mayor's point on the wanting it in writing that, you know, they say they're not going to close the plant, or they say they're not going to eliminate jobs, but until they have shown us in writing they are not going to do it, we don't trust it. That I totally understand, but it does seem like there isn't a whole lot. There are a lot of people who agree. There are a lot of people who do not. So from my perspective, it looks like there just are, there's so many differing opinions on this deal, and that it's not one monolith of ideas here, that a lot of people really truly are on both sides of this.
Yeah. And you know, and this, I think we should reiterate, this is a private transaction among two private companies that are both publicly traded. And, you know, unless there is some sort of national security issue, quite frankly, the government shouldn't have a say in the matter. And that's, I think, what we tend to forget in all of this, right? That this is a willing private transaction among voluntary participants. And for some reason, everybody thinks they should have a voice in this, when in reality, in almost any other case, nobody would be saying a word. You know, if this company weren't named U.S. Steel and didn't have a lot of influential votes in places like Pennsylvania, you know, I don't think it would even make a blip on the radar screen, because in terms of total value, it's actually a relatively small merger. It's just, you know, once politics gets involved, then things get amped up to you know, pretty ludicrous levels sometimes.
Yeah, Scott, it's interesting that you bring up even like the name U.S. Steel. Do you think some of the political aspect of this is the rise in populism in both the Republican and Democratic parties, and this idea of U.S. Steel being sold to a Japanese company? It's just on a superficial level, just purely the optics. They kind of want to make that more USA populism push.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. You know, along with all the union politics and the rest of that stuff, the reality is that when the name U.S. Steel still evokes a lot of memories and economic nostalgia for a lot of people. And to be out there as President Biden or future President Trump and saying that you're championing an American-owned U.S. Steel, that's going to resonate with a lot of those populist voters, kind of fueling that nostalgia and sentiment. So, it makes perfect sense from that perspective as well.
Scott, really good stuff. That's Scott Linsicum, Vice President of General Economics at the Cato Institute's Herbert A. Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies. Scott, we appreciate your time today. Would love to have you on again.
My pleasure. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you so much. That is Scott Linsicum. Yeah, Ron, really interesting with the mayor. You could feel his frustration with this, the lack of transparency on this deal. And also, I think with the snow. I think he was dealing with a lot yesterday.
people were like, "What? When are you going to plow my road?
Know,
just leave me alone. We're working on it."
Trying to handle the steel plant. Can you ask him when my neighborhood's going to be done? So the mayor had a full plate yesterday. We'll talk to Scott again, because I also want to follow this lawsuit, see if it goes anywhere, because it does. I think the name U.S. Steel sounds so official, you kind of forget. Like, oh, that's a private company, and Nippon's a private company, and this was just a deal between two private companies. I don't know why it feels more Defense Department-y, you know, for lack of better term.
I'll tell you what, and I would love somebody to back me up on this, somebody who was employed by Granite City Steel, which is what we called it when I was growing up, and whether or not this was true, but I was always told that because of security purposes, you weren't allowed to take photographs of the plant.
Like, from the outside?
Yeah, there was something about photos. They weren't allowed to do that because there were security concerns. And I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if it was a national security thing or whatever. But I always found that to be really interesting. But that's what we were always told.
Yeah. You know, Ranja, speaking of that, we got a message on our YouTube channel from Harold. He says, "I work at U.S. Steel in Granite. It's awful that they won't tell us anything. It's been going on for over 2 years. Please tell us something. Our lives are on hold."
Yeah, and here's, I think it would be upon both of these companies to reach out to the mayor. Talk to the mayor. Maybe they think they don't need to. But talk to the mayor so he can tell his people what he's hearing from you directly and not just what the union is telling him. I mean, don't you think that would be automatic?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the mayor wants more information, too. He had said reach out even to your congressperson, to representative, someone that you can talk to. But we will continue to follow this story. Obviously, a huge impact on the area. Hey, I don't know if you saw, there was a story in the St. Louis Business Journal about Mayor Tashara Jones and her busy travel schedule. She was out of town on work trips at least 64 times during her first 42 months in office. Later on in the hour, we will be joined by the Director of Communications for the Mayor, Connor Kerrigan. He joins us in studio. It is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. As always, we love to get your voice messages on the Odyssey app, the microphone icon. You can leave us a voice message like Rich did.
Highway 21, Tucson Ferry, is completely snow covered. That's a state highway.
Oh, there you go. Highway 21.
Oh, man.
Like I said, Olive and Creve Coeur, as of this morning, maybe it's clear now, but Highway 21, snow covered. I know 141 this morning north toward Olive was also a little rough going. And you got to be careful on the entrance and exits. Those still have snowplow piles randomly in the middle of those. You're still seeing some cars getting stuck.
I've been checking, what's the website? Getting Around Illinois. I think it's from the Illinois Department of Transportation.
And if anyone gets around, you do.
You're proud of yourself, aren't you? By the way, I have a great story for you guys. I'm not going to tell you now, but okay. I have a really great story for you.
All right.
I might share it on the air, so I don't know. Anyway, so I've been checking the travel conditions,
yeah.
And the state of Illinois is really killing it with their highways.
Really?
They have, oh, yeah, they've been doing a great job. There's hardly any blue or pink. It's all just clear, smooth sailing.
There
so I can't wait to travel home.
You're going to do great. You're really going to crush it on your way home.
Thanks,
we had
guys.
A text from a 636. The Granite mayor is correct. Err on the side of caution. No doubt U.S. Steel was a DOD vendor in World War II. At some point after that, they may have ceased to be. Yes, because we were saying right now they don't have any contracts with the Department of Defense or anything like that. We also had a 618. Hey, Amy, could not agree with you more about the orthopedic center. I was talking about the BJC Orthopedic Center and the Injury Clinic. Dr. Matt Matava, I think that's how you say it, and Dr. Halstead fixed me up a couple of years ago with a torn ACL, and I could not be happier. I'm telling you, it was a game changer. To go, you can have surgery at this place, Ronj. You can have outpatient surgery.
Oh.
You can get an MRI, and you're not around sick people.
I've always
wanted
to just...
It's a beautiful... Yes, and I almost want to get surgery now. That's how nice it was.
Yeah, it was it?
It was awesome.
I am so terrified of being put under for any reason.
Really?
You've never
been put under?
Well, the last time was for my wisdom teeth.
Yeah.
And I told them that it gives me anxiety, and they gave me the laughing gas, which I guess worked. So,
well, they'll probably put you under if you get a colonoscopy.
I'm aware.
It's not bad. You get nervous, but the thing is, you're like, oh my gosh, I'll never fall asleep. And before you even say,
I know,
you were.
I know. I think
out.
They had me do the count to 10 thing when they were giving me the drugs, mm-hmm. You know, to fall asleep.
I think the colonoscopy anesthesia, though, is the good stuff. It's the Michael Jackson special. I know. Michael Kelly.
Well, he died.
I know. It's not the kind that kills you. It's a very pleasant, dreamy anesthesia.
Oh, I could use that.
I think you would really enjoy it. And you would lose like 5 pounds or something, because I think they really clean you out when you do those colonoscopies.
Yeah, I've always been told, and by somebody you and I both know, said mm-hmm. the worst part about it, he called it the whoosh.
Ugh.
He said that's the worst, I know.
Yeah, that's
he
rough.
Said that's the worst part about the whole thing is the whoosh.
Hey, Ronj, I just want to do a quick update here. Remember Jingle! Exclamation point, the holiday extravaganza in O'Fallon, that was a real fire festival.
Love this.
Yeah, in the sense that the food trucks weren't there or they were closed. It was covered in ice. The lights were whatever. People were overcharged. It was just a horrible experience for all of the people who were patronizing Jingle. They also packed up, left town, and didn't pay their workers.
What?
Yep. The Jingle has left town with at least 100 employees still waiting on their final paychecks.
I feel very bad for the people who may have counted on that money mm-hmm. and then went out and worked. And, you know, I'm sure it was, you know, wasn't like the highest paying work. And so you have people who counted on it. But it is, you've got the CEO of the company mm-hmm. blaming, quote, unforeseen circumstances beyond our control, as if that's just going to be you didn't tell us you were going to have unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah, if it's beyond your control, I totally get it.
Well, in that case, I no worries. Just pay us when you can. But the people who don't get paid, mm-hmm. that really sucks for them. But stepping back 10,000 mm-hmm. feet and mm-hmm. looking at it, it is just so ridiculous and funny that there was a fire festival in the St. Louis area, and this whole thing was a giant bust.
It was so bad. Even they said the festival faced significant setbacks when its flagship attraction, the ice skating trail, was delivered 3 weeks late. Yeah, that would be a huge deal. They said they're really sorry, but they suffered reputational harm. I mean, what are you going to do about that?
Well,
you can't. I mean, they're trying their best.
This is like the snow showing up a week after Christmas.
The people are insane. Like, we're just so... The fact that they paid $50, $75, $100 or more to get their families into what was supposed to be a fully immersive holiday experience, and it's just slippery floors that had been laid down on the pavement, just very icy and dangerous, or laid down on the field, I should say, and a couple of lights strung up.
I am just imagining people paying the money, walking around going, this is stupid. We just paid $75 for this?
The worst. Hey, he's Chris Ranji. I'm Amy Mark Scores. Connor Kerrigan of Mayor Tashara Jones' office. He joins us next to talk about the trips that the mayor has taken during her tenure. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, the St. Louis Business Journal released a story today with the title, The Traveling Mayor, and it does discuss Mayor Tashara Jones' aggressive travel schedule, noting that she has taken about 64 trips in the 42 months of office that she's been here, and then talks about the time when she was treasurer in 2012 and some of the trips that she took then, and then continuing on as mayor of the city of St. Louis. And to talk about that a bit more is Mayor Tashara Jones, Director of Communications, Connor Kerrigan, joining us in Studio B today. Connor, thanks for making the trek over here.
Yeah, absolutely. The roads were pretty clear between Dogtown and downtown, thanks to the folks at our streets department, so it wasn't too hard to get down here. And happy to see you made it in as well.
I did. Wore my boots and my ski fleece today to make sure, in case I got stuck on one of the ramps.
Yeah.
But let's dive into it because it does seem like a lot of trips that the mayor has taken. Between 2013 and 2017, there were about 50 trips, and she has taken some more since then. Those trips at the time between 2013 and 17, according to the Business Journal, collectively cost taxpayers more than $27,000. Let's talk about these trips more recently as mayor and what they are.
Yeah. So important to note that I believe only one of the trips since she's been mayor has had any cost to taxpayers. Other than that, these are not taxpayer dollars. Typically, when the mayor's traveling, it comes out of either personal funds or organizations like the United States Conference of Mayors or Bloomberg will be funding that travel. So really important to note that these are not taxpayer dollars. However, the benefit to the city, I believe, can't be overstated. You know, St. Louis hasn't had a seat on the national stage for quite some time. We hear a lot of complaints that St. Louis has been overlooked. Under Mayor Tashara Jones, that's changed. You know, she's utilized existing relationships. For example, I know that she's close with Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, many others in the administration. She's utilized those relationships plus new relationships to help help put St. Louis at the table. And the thing is, if you want St. Louis to be at the table, sometimes we physically have to be at the table. And Mayor Jones has been able to execute on that. Right now, we're working on something around $4 billion in federally funded projects. That's between the airport, between the Metrolink Green Line, our violence prevention efforts. Getting that money into the city is no easy task, and Mayor Jones has used her position and her abilities to represent the city on the national stage to help bring those federal philanthropic resources in.
Certainly would agree that we need to, as a region, move forward and be recognized more nationally. Mm-hmm. I think we've all been talking about that, that we were sort of an afterthought as it goes around the country. So do we... In this period of time, do we feel like we've made any real progress, and do we have anything to show for it where you can say these trips have brought us this?
Yeah.
This is what we have to show for it.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we got some graphics that we've put out on the mayor's social media pages, and she put out a video as well, kind of talking through some of the federal funding that we've brought in. Our violence prevention efforts have received millions. We've gotten some funding through some programs for Greater St. Louis for our business development. Those have brought in, you know, something around $25 million something dollars. As well, we've got two international flights that are now flying out of St. Louis Lambert Airport under the Jones administration. There's the Lufthansa trip to Germany, and then this year I actually got to go, not to Montreal, but I got to go to the airport before they flew to Montreal. Now we've got those two additional international flights. So again, when you look at the amount of federal funding that's come into the city under Mayor Jones and the programs that we've been able to stood up and the partnerships that we've developed on the national level, I would say this is absolutely beneficial.
Do you think we wouldn't have gotten those flights if she had not gone on those trips related to the flights?
I wasn't in the room for the decision-making process, but I certainly think that it helped, right? It is absolutely. I've seen her in action talking to these folks. I've seen her having these conversations with these federal leaders, with these companies on the national scale. She often speaks on panels at these events, and she eloquently represents the city of St. Louis. We hear back all the time. Once people hear that she's the mayor for St. Louis, we start to get a lot of compliments about the work that we're doing. Absolutely. She is helping to move us in a positive direction here.
Do you feel that way about the violence prevention funds? I guess because cities are going, you know, we've gotten federal funds before.
Sure.
There are certain federal programs that you apply for. You don't have to go in person and beg for that funding. So do you think, like, can you put a number to the funds that we got because she went in person versus just the traditional application?
Yeah, again, I don't have them in front of me, right? I can't. It's a long list. But we have on her social media, we've got some graphics out. We also did put out a federal memo that is accessible to the public that shows all of the different kind of federal funding that we've gotten under Mayor Jones. When you talk about violence prevention, I mean, Amy, it's really important to note that the Office of Violence Prevention in the city of St. Louis was founded by Mayor Tashara Jones. We didn't have an Office of Violence Prevention before her. So when you're talking about our anti-violence efforts, I would say that absolutely having an Office of Violence Prevention established and running in the city is something that helps us get to that federal funding for violence prevention.
So in knowing all of this, I think what you might run into, if you haven't already run into it in the last 24 hours or so, is they see the mayor's been out of town and she's not really paying attention to what's going on here and is not here physically present to address needs the city has. What would you say to that?
Yeah, so to say that she's ignoring or not aware of situations in the city, to me, is just completely unfounded. You know, as a member of her staff, I consistently communicate with the mayor when she's traveling, as do we all. She's got a fantastic team around her. Jared Boyd, Chief of Staff, Nancy Cross, Executive Director of Operations. She is in consistent communication with us while she is traveling. Not only that, but we need to remember that now we have the technology to be able to continuously communicate while she's traveling. This is the same technology that was used by both the Crewson administration and our administration during the pandemic. We're talking about, you know, conference calling. We're talking about consistently being on phone calls. I don't think there's a whole lot of daylight between Mayor Jones and the city of St. Louis, even when she's in D.C. And if she's in D.C. and something were to require her attention, that's mm-hmm. a quick quick flight back. So again, you know, to say that she's not aware of what's going on in the city just because she's physically not here doesn't ring true to me. I am consistently on the phone with her. She attends meetings via Zoom, just like we did during the pandemic. Technology in today's day and age allows us to continuously conduct municipal business.
What if someone's listening going, well, but her job is in St. Louis. If she can be a mayor effectively via Zoom, why can't she stay in St. Louis and apply for different funds and talk with other mayors via Zoom so she can stay in St. Louis? Like, why does she have to go to them and leave the people of St. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, at least in my mind, it's the same reason that it's more beneficial for me to come here to the studio and talk to you face to face than it would be for me to call in or Zoom, right? Being physically at the table and being able to have side conversations, being able to face to face with federal leaders, members of the cabinet and things like that is very, very helpful. And she's able to conduct the business of the city with the excellent staff and team that she's built around her and get that FaceTime with these federal leaders, with these philanthropic leaders to continue to bring financing and resources into the city of St. Louis.
So if she's on some of these trips and these were not paid with taxpayer dollars. We've got the information from your office. Mm-hmm. The Bloomberg City Lab in Mexico City, mm-hmm. Salt Lake City, Utah Conference, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a mayor conference of mayors, Cape Cod. So even traveling, you're still traveling a lot. You're at conferences, so you can't be connected to the city. Who is in charge of the city minute by minute while the mayor is out of town?
Mayor Jones. Mayor Jones is consistently communicating with her staff. When you're talking about being at a conference or being on a panel, that's the same as being in a meeting. It's not that she's disconnected in some extreme way. If something were to happen that required immediate attention, it's easy to make that happen. But again, it's also important to note that the mayor has a fantastic team around her. Her senior staff is consistently responsive and communicating with her.
Kansas City has like an official city manager. I don't think St. Louis has that.
We do not.
So is there someone that acts in that capacity while the mayor is gone?
So that's, I don't want to, it sounds like a legal question, right? Of like legally, who is running the city if she is traveling. However, according to city statute and legal opinion dating back to the 1920s, her absence from the city is defined only if she is incapable of doing municipal business while she is traveling, which again, she is fully capable of doing. This is exactly how we did municipal business during the pandemic. This is how Crewson did municipal business during the pandemic. We have video conferencing. We're on the phone consistently. Mayor Jones is running the city of St. Louis.
If something were to happen, like in what happened in New Orleans, an emergency, a terrorist attack, something like that, I mean, that seems that it would be hard to manage that crisis over the phone or to spend time traveling, getting on a flight from New York or Mexico City when something like this is happening.
Sure. So we just had a winter storm over these last 2 days, and I don't know if you've seen the roads, but they've been paved. The city has been responding adequately, and we've been doing that through Zoom conferencing for our command center calls. So we have managed crises without needing to physically be in a room with one another. That's what's been happening over the last 72 hours. If something like, you mentioned New Orleans, mm-hmm. were to happen, the mayor would be on the first flight home. However, for things like the winter storm, she's been in the city, but we haven't been able to travel. So we've all been communicating consistently since I think Thursday night was the first command center call that we had on this. And we've had one every roughly 12 hours since then. And that's how the city's been able to respond to this winter storm so effectively.
There was a lot of, I want to move on for just a second,
sure.
because there was a lot of criticism or, I guess, concern about that ARPA money that needed to be allocated before the end of the year. And there were some discrepancies about where the money was or if it all was sent where it needed to go or committed to where it needed to be. Does the city feel like they have accomplished what they needed to with that money? Has it all been allocated in the way it should be?
So I... allocated, obligated, spent. Those are three different definitions. The obligation deadline was December 31st. And the information that I have currently is that, yes, absolutely all of the money was obligated by December 31st. There's still some auditing and accounting that needs to be done, right? That's a huge pot of money. We got to make sure that all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and the math all adds up. But it is absolutely my understanding that by December 31st deadline, we had all of that ARPA money obligated, which is what that deadline is. The next step in the process is getting all of that money spent in the next 2 years. So that deadline is December 31st, 2026.
And Connor, I know before we let you go, a question that people would have, and, you know, okay, with the trips, how much money have the taxpayers spent on these trips? How much money has been taxpayer money?
For her time in mayor, mm-hmm. there's been one trip.
Okay.
And it was early in her administration. And I know for a fact that number is under $1,000. However, no other taxpayer dollars have been spent on her travel. Everything has been either personal funds or Bloomberg, philanthropic funds, those types of things. But taxpayer dollars outside of the one trip early on, which again was for sure under $1,000, taxpayer dollars have not been spent on the mayor's travel.
So like you said, so outside of that, the other trips, is it fair to say were either Mayor Jones just out of pocket personally, private donor, philanthropic?
Yeah, Bloomberg, United States Conference of Mayors, National League of Cities, those types of organizations. And all of this information is publicly available. So if you go to the mayor's Instagram, we've got a link tree. And if you go to her link tree, there's a button that says Federal Accomplishments. Click on that. That's going to have a bunch of this information. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, when Jacob started, a different reporter at the Business Journal started writing this piece quite a while ago. Our office has been consistently responsive and open with him this entire time, because you're right. If taxpayer dollars were going to this, it would absolutely be public information. However, even without it being taxpayer dollars, we're still more than happy to provide this information because, you know, me personally and the administration, we're proud of the accomplishments that Mayor Jones has been able to bring to the city of St. Louis. The city of St. Louis is looking better and getting more resources and funding under her administration, and we have a seat at the national table. And that's really important for a city like St. Louis.
And you were saying, again, last thing, that she has managed this last snowmageddon crisis remotely because she hasn't been able. She's still out
she's
of town
been,
now.
No.
She is town.
No,
okay.
No. She's in the city. No one was able to travel on the roads. So she was managing that from her house. We were all working from our house initially. She did go visit the streets department yesterday. So during their shift change, she went by and thanked them for all their work. But no, the mayor has not been out of town during this crisis. We've been managing all of that in the city, but we've had to manage it through video conferencing because it was dangerous to travel.
Got it. Thank you for the clarification.
Absolutely.
That is Connor Kerrigan, the Director of Communications for Mayor Tashara Jones, joining us in Studio B today. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
He's Chris Ranji. I'm Amy Markscores. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Chris Ranji, Amy Markscores with you for a few more minutes. And Ranj, man, he's really teasing us for tomorrow, I guess. Because he's got a heck of a story.
I got a pretty good one.
Yeah.
You're always trying to just, you know, you're always trying to like dig and find out things about my personal life and you won't leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know how that's how you are?
Well, obviously it's because I care.
Yeah.
It's called friendship. That's what it's called. Ever try it sometime? Ever heard of it? Friendship.
Yeah, and you just won't leave me alone.
Yeah.
I have one I think I'm gonna tell you.
I am very excited about
this.
What we have talked about all year, and our loyal listeners have heard this, our first-time listeners might be surprised to learn that Chris Ranji has a wife and kids in Chicago. Is it about your family?
Okay. No.
Okay.
Because I do not have a family.
Okay.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
Your friends are family, aren't you? Don't you think, Amy? Friends are your family.
Not really.
So... Yeah, but no, I do not have a family. But I do have a story.
All right.
I have a pretty good story that I think I will share with you tomorrow.
All right.
It is kind of bonkers.
That's a heck of a tease. And so you can't miss tomorrow. I mean, if you thought we encouraged you to listen when we had tickets to give away, that is peanuts.
Dude.
That is nothing compared to this. Hey, I will say, if you guys are skiing, are you a skier, Ranj?
Yeah, I do it all the time.
Well,
I mean,
Granite City Slopes. That's where you are.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
The Granite City Slopes. So there's a ski patrol strike going on right now at America's largest ski area by acreage, and that would be Park City Resorts. And it is pretty bad. So this Park City Resorts is run by Vail Resorts, which I believe also runs Hidden Valley here in St. Louis, the second largest ski resort in North America. But the 99 of Park City's 350 trails were open on Saturday. That is up from 81, and only 50 trails were earlier this week. The thing is, they have fewer trails open, fewer lifts operating, because the ski patrol's on strike. So everyone who bought passes already, you can't stop them from showing up. They stopped selling day passes on the spot, but all of these people who had ski trips for the new year were still going to Park City. They said the lines for the few lifts that were open were like 4 hours long.
So you'd have to wait 4 hours to get to the top, and then that would be your day.
You'd
go down once, and that would be your day.
Yeah. If you got up super early, you could go down twice. And people were understandably upset because it is expensive to go skiing. It's just a hassle. You know how some things are an ordeal?
Yes.
I love skiing, but it is an ordeal. And I can't imagine planning this trip with my family, spending the money. And I know, I don't know, I've heard some like people going, oh, well, that's what skiers deserve. You know, oh, all these rich people skiing. I'm like, what are you talking about? First of all, as expensive as skiing is, do you know what it's cheaper than? Disney World. Disney World's expensive. Disney claims to be pro-family. They are ripping the lining out of the pocketbooks of these families. So regular people go skiing. Some people, like, maybe you save. That's your big family trip. You're not going to Disney because you want to go on this trip. And the strike is not. I would have been devastated if I had, like, saved to take my family on this trip and you go down the hill once and that's it because you can't wait in line for 4 hours.
Well, I suppose if you're going to do a strike, this is the time to do it. This would be like Amazon going on strike 2 weeks before Christmas, like Amazon people.
I think they did I call it a fake strike. They said Amazon was on strike, but I think it was just the Teamsters like saying that they should strike.
It was just the that one guy who threw all the
little bit of a clip up there, but that's okay. We had to cut the mic.
Oh my gosh.
We're out of time now. He is Chris Ronji. I'm Amy Mark Scores. I will be sticking around for the Dave Glover Hour. Chris Ronji, as you heard, he is going to be back with a heck of a story tomorrow.
Just look at his face.
If you follow us on the YouTube, you can see Chris Ronji. Super excited to tell us a story. Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you missed anything, you can download the Odyssey app. You can subscribe to the Chris and Amy Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts. The Glover Show is next.